John, in terms of propulsion, let's say it's in a UFO or it's in one of these triangular-shaped devices that they're seeing all around the planet. How would it work for propulsion? How fast could they go?
I would say unlimited speed and also no problems with inertia and turning. There was a proposal given to the U.S. government by the group I was with some years ago for that aspect for micro payload boost, helping out rocket ships and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be the way to go in hyper-propulsion, going faster than light.
Silent? Is it relatively silent, or does it make a lot of noise?
These machines are relatively silent because there's a lot of film crews that have filmed the effects in here. Levitating water was something that John Ealer, director of photography, was filming for the History Channel. They didn't show that in that show, Earth Black Holes, but it's very quiet. All you hear is some spark sounds in the other room. I'm at the control panel operating all the different dials and that.
Does the size of the equipment determine the size of the vehicle that needs to be lifted, John?
No, I think that I've lifted up like just under a ton, as well as that was in the one of the labs I had, and here that was filmed by a disclosure project representative, 1,500 pounds. So you're dealing like 70 watts, the lowest power, but doing all kinds of incredible lifting factors.
So let's say in a vehicle. Where would you put the device in relation to the rest of, the, like, a cockpit or something like that?
Well, you could basically get rid of the motor and the transmission systems and put that inside of a car and then put a shield around it that would be an anti-gravity shield. Then you could simply steer it in all different directions, up or down or at any speed you want to go.
Let me just indicate here that... probably we're talking about cancellation of the long-range electromagnetic effects of the universe. You know, inertia. If you make a right-angle turn or a left-angle turn, you normally experience what they call centrifugal forces or inertial forces. But inertial forces are thought to be associated with the rest of the universe, the stars in the universe at far distances. But if the electromagnetic coupling constant is the needed to couple to the long-range forces, and if you cancel that on the craft surface, then you cancel the effects of inertia. So basically, if you can reduce the inertial effects through cancellation on the surface of long-range forces in the universe, you've canceled inertia. So navigation, you can make right-angle turns, no problem, at high speed, because there's no inertia. Also, there's no inertia. If there's no inertia, if the rest mass goes to zero, it doesn't take any energy to move around. You can move as fast as you want.
Well, yeah, that's true, too. That's true, too. Now, what about the people who are in the vehicle when this is becoming anti-gravity? What happens to them?
They don't experience any gravity. They're in their own. They maintain their local space-time environment and don't experience any of the effects. They're just sitting there nice and calm, and they can make a sharp right-angle turn, and they don't experience any inertial effects at all. It's just like you sitting right where you are. Traveling is like sitting at a desk.
And what would allow you to continue to go faster and faster and faster?
Well, if you convert more and more negative, more and more, to stay in the zero point, okay? You're in the zero point system. If you go if you go into subspace or hyperspace, however you want to say it, if you go into hyperspace, you avoid the singularities. The whole universe becomes transparent, and you can move as fast as you want, anywhere you want, and you won't collide with anything. The sun, you can go right through the sun because the sun is in a different hyperspace. You're in a different hyperspace. And so this also has to do with the Lorentz transformations. You know, physicists only know about the Lorentz transformation mostly. That's why they say you can't go faster than the speed of light, because they're all based on the Lorentz transformation and the work of Einstein. But there are three other gauge transformations with the Lorentz gauge alone, and they never use the three other gauges, so three other norms, as they're called. And so basically, physicists are very, very myopic. They don't know what's going on with this kind of stuff. They're stuck where Einstein left off. But these extraterrestrials, they know about it. You know, that's why these physicists say there are no extraterrestrials coming here, because they think you can't go faster than the speed of light. But that's all based on the so-called Minkowski norm of the Lorentz gauge. And there's other gauges. There are many gauges, all kinds of different gauges. And so you use these other gauges, the universe changes. Space is also much different. It isn't Euclidean. Physicists think the space is Euclidean. It is not Euclidean. We know that Einstein taught us that it's not Euclidean, but they still think it's Euclidean. It's a complex field, a hyperspace. It's a phase space. It's a Hilbert space. It's complicated, George.
Now, as this is evolving, I'm still talking about it in applications of a craft, and we'll get into some other possibilities, including weather modification and weaponry and everything else. Fascinating. But in terms of in a craft, would that also explain, Bob and John, some UFOs that seem to just disappear and then appear again?
Sure.
Okay.
I would say so, too.
Now,
well, basically, when they jumped to hyperspace, you know, we think that the Star Trek episode was all nonsense, but it isn't nonsense. Basically, if you stay in the zero point and you go to the right gauge, you can disappear. John made all kinds of things disappear. Now, where do they go? If they lose their inertial mass, how much energy does it take to move something that doesn't weigh anything?
Where do they go, John, when they disappear?
Well, go somewhere else and reappear somewhere else, too. I've had a lot of those kind of samples do that. I've had other samples where the steel itself is like aging in time, which was analyzed by the Max Planck Institute some years ago. And they're saying that it appears that the steel bar is aging for every day about 10 years ahead in time. And it's slowly crumbling apart. Now, I sent that bar off to my scientific partner, George Hathaway, in Toronto, Canada, who's had these bars and that analyzed extensively and shown to many, many different scientists that written up reports on them. So it's quite interesting. I mean, when working with these kind of fields, like you mentioned, the Philadelphia experiment,
yeah, absolutely. You know, old Al Bielek comes on the show every once in a while, and
he's an interesting fellow.
He's one of a kind.
You know, I used to think that Al Bielek was making all that stuff up, but I'm not so sure. You know, it sounds very, 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 very far out. But now that I really have a better understanding of phase-space physics and gauge transformations, I'm not at all sure.